Good morning and welcome to the Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden, and I work here at the Binary Research Institute. Jeff can't be here today, but I'll give it a shot. What we do at the Binary Research Institute is we focus on ancient cultures, and we're particularly interested in what they knew. You see, there's a sort of a worldwide belief amongst ancient cultures that there's a changing of consciousness over long periods of time, and something Plato called the Great Year, where you have a golden age and then a dark age. And this was a very common belief. Over 30 ancient cultures talked about it in their myth and folklore. And, of course, we're taught that it's not real nowadays, that it's just an old myth. But there's an increasing amount of evidence that ancient cultures were indeed much more advanced than they're given credit for. So on this show, we interview people, authors, scientists that have studied different aspects of this cycle or have some interesting type of knowledge about the ancients. And today we have a very interesting speaker. His name is Boris Fritz. He is an engineer, senior engineer with Northrop Grumman Corporation. He holds three patents. He's involved in new manufacturing. In fact, he founded the National Nano Manufacturing Technology Group. He also serves as a part-time faculty member at Loyola Marymount University in Science and Engineering. And he spoke at CPAC a few years ago. And what he did is he sort of tied in some of the cutting edge of nanotechnology and used these as metaphors to understand ancient cultures, which is a topic that he has studied quite a bit on the side. You see, he has a bachelor's in philosophy, a master's in Asian studies, and he's a PhD candidate in the history of religion with minors in India and Sanskrit right now. And so I'd like to welcome Boris Fritz to the show. Boris, are you on?
Yes, I'm right here.
Hey, I'm really glad you could make it, and I guess today we'll be talking about the yugas and religion and anything else you want to talk about?
Right, that sounds absolutely wonderful. You know, we always have some wonderful discussions when we get together.
Yeah, we do, and Boris and I happened to bump into each other at a meditation retreat here a few weeks ago and got a chance to talk about the yugas during some meals. And anyway, he's got a wealth of knowledge here, so let's get into it. Boris, give us just a quick little overview of the yugas for those that might not be familiar.
Okay. Well, I guess basically to start out, we would talk about the 24,000-year cycle that the many ancient civilizations speak about, and they all kind of seem to come up with that somewhat similar number, not all, but it's a precessional cycle of the equinox. And what's important is that, you know, from what we know most about is from Plato in the West, and most people have heard of the Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze and the Iron Age from Plato, from his Timaeus. And what's really interesting is that he got this knowledge from Egypt. And in ancient Egypt, they had these traditions for endless periods of time. And they even mentioned that something about how we are so happy. Well, basically, what the priest told Plato is that you are like children, you Greeks, because you've forgotten all these previous cycles and the destruction of mankind. So we have to begin over and over again. You don't remember, but we remember this. So that's actually in Plato's writing.
I've heard that mentioned, yeah, and that's sort of an indication of the Great Year that there's a loss of consciousness, so to speak, in the declining age. And, of course, most knowledge is lost during the darkest age.
Right. And so you have the four ages and the 12,000-year ascending, 12,000 years descending. And they're divided up in a 4-3-2-1 ratio. So the golden age will last 4,800 years, the silver 3,600, the bronze 2,400, and the iron age lasts 1,200 years. And, of course, if you're in the last 12,000-year cycle going downwards, ended at 500 A.D. And so
that was the bottom of this last cycle, according to Sri Yukteswar, I guess.
Right, and that was also, there are two larger cycles, and we may have bottomed out, and that's kind of a little bit unknown, but we know that at least the second larger cycle is also bottoming out. And so we were in some pretty low times. And so you have that 1,200-year downgoing Kali Yuga or Iron Age from the descending 12,000-year cycle. And then you come back up the 1,200 years of the ascending Dark Age cycle. So you have 2,400 total years of Dark Age that you're dealing with. And that's most of what we know about history, unfortunately.
Yeah, recorded history barely goes back 5,000 years, and even, you know, beyond 500 years, it gets pretty murky.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I guess Sri Yukteswar, who was the guru of Paramahansa Yogananda, who wrote Autobiography of a Yogi, was the one who really tied the yugas, the cycle of the ages, into history. And it's kind of interesting because he came up with the realization that these length of cycles, that in India in ancient times, people started with each age again at year one of that age. So in 3102 BC was when the last Silver Age ended and the Bronze Age began.
Of the descending cycle.
The descending cycle, right. And so the Indian calendar says that we're in the year 5110, which very quickly will be in 5111. But the point is that if you take the 3102 years and add 2000, that's the BCE, before the Common Era, the 3102 years, then add the 2009 years of that we're in, of after the Common Era, add those together, you get 5111, and that's exactly, you know, the Indian calendar where they're at. And that's because when the Bronze Age ended in 702 BC, they were at 2400 years of the Bronze Age, and then they just kept adding. They went to 2401 instead of starting at year one of Kali Yuga. And that's where the confusion came in, because the people at that time did not want to recognize that they were entering the Dark Age. They were terribly afraid of it.
Right, yes, I'd heard that before. So each of the Indian calendars was named after the Yuga and started again at the year one, just like we start a month on the first day. Or we start the clock of the day at, you know, with the first minute or first hour. So too would they restart their calendar to go with this larger processional cycle and each of the seasons within the cycle.
So it's pretty exciting to see that, you know, the Indian calendar year 5111 is actually, you know, makes perfect sense with the yugas, and it ties us into history. So now we know where we are. And what we find is because India kept so many records, all these scriptures, they have so many special keys that are vital to understanding ancient times. And I wanted to quote from Autobiography of a Yogi, Lari Mahashaya, the sage in the 1800s. He had said, "The Bhagavad Gita and other parts of the Mahabharata epic possess several knot points. Keep the knot points unquestioned, and we find only mythical stories and easily misunderstood type. Leave the knot points unexplained, and we lose a science that India has preserved with superhuman patience after a quest of thousands of years of experiment." that is experiment in spirituality and liberation, that sort of thing. And what's so important about that quote is not only the knot points that they talk about in the certain scriptures of understanding them more clearly in the usual way that people will interpret the Bhagavad Gita on a deeper symbolic level. Those are knot points that clarify what it really means. But at the same time, Taramata, who was a disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, came up with a lot of what I would call keys of the Vedas, of Hinduism, that clarified the ages. And these, again, are these knot points. If you ignore them, you've lost most of the most important knowledge of ancient times. And one of the things that she clarified are these different properties that you find in Hinduism. One of them having to deal with the caste system. You think caste system only deals with the Shudra, the servants or laborers, the Vaishyas or merchants, Kshatriyas or warriors, and Brahmins, priests, saints. But what it really means in terms of the Yugas, the four Yugas, is very clear. It means that in the Dark Age, the Shudras, the slavery, is slavery to the body. That's when only the body is real. And we can't understand anything deeper. Then we go on to the Bronze Age, and that's where we're into the age of business. And you look at our time, we've just gotten into the Bronze Age.
Yes, Sri Yukteswar says we basically came into this ascending to a Para Yuga or Bronze Age about commensurate with the Renaissance or shortly thereafter.
Right, yeah, that was the transition period. The extra years of history, the ages are 4,000, 3,000, 2,000, 1,000 years. And then when you talk 4,800, the 800 years are 400 going into and 400 going out of that age. It's a transition period.
Right. They each have their little dawn and dusk, so to speak.
Right,
so we're just sort of coming out of the transition here between the darkest material age into an age where we start to understand finer forces and electricity, magnetism, that sort of thing.
Right. And in fact, that brings up the six systems of Indian philosophy that have some kind of tie-in with the Yugas. And Taramata was brilliant in bringing that out, because if you apply it, it makes perfect sense to the ages. Because Nyaya, which is the ancient Indian philosophy dealing with logic, is really representing the dark age of logic, fundamentalism, dogma. Remember the scholasticism of our dark ages, of the Middle Ages, that were then superseded. People didn't want to deal with scholasticism, you know, where they would argue whether Adam and Eve had a navel, that sort of thing. They got into things that are more important in the Renaissance when the transition came. And so the next step, or the Bronze Age, is the second system of Indian philosophy, which is Vaisheshika, which is science and outer exploration and exploration of the atom. And that's critical for our age, and we know that this is what we're going to be spending most of our time on, along with the business
right,
aspect.
The age of the merchant, so to speak.
Right.
A lot of activity. And you're right. People are beginning to untie some of these ancient knots, too. I know that Giorgio de Santayana and Hertha von Deschen, the authors of Hamlet's Mill, were sort of the first to write scholarly papers on the metaphors of myth and folklore. And they found that, indeed, it is a, quote, scientific language of yore, unquote. And so it seems we're keeping with Lahiri's idea here.
Yeah, and then the next step in the Silver Age is Sankhya Yoga, techniques of spiritual development, which come to the fore. And then in the Golden Age, the Vedanta philosophy, dealing with perception of God. And so it helps to kind of delineate things. One of the even more important things is the four illusions that cover the infinity of God that talked about in India. And
So you're saying that there's a correspondence then between the caste system and the type of yugas, and of course the what we see going on around us in the physical world.
Right, right.
And a movement from this very material mindset to a more active, inquisitive mindset in the present age. And then how would you define the silver yuga?
Well, the silver age would deal more with Sankhya yoga. People are involved in interior techniques of meditation, whereas in our age we're focusing outwardly on science. And so like the think tanks that we have nowadays, in the next age will be yogis meditating, uncovering the powers of the soul. So people are more involved in the silver age with what we would think of as sorcery and magic. And you kind of see that when you look at the Egyptians. The Egyptians they were extremely conservative, and they kept much of the knowledge of the Silver Age down into the last Bronze Age. And so when you talk about Moses and Aaron fighting the Egyptian priests and the magical battle that they had where they turned their staffs into snakes and then Moses did the different plagues, those are not just stories. They actually had those powers. We think of them as magic, and just like Arthur C. Clarke said, you know, any technology becomes advanced enough will seem like magic to us. And so when you develop inner powers of the soul, then you get a different type of technology, which is an inner technology that you see in the Silver Age.
Right. Well, it's almost inconceivable in the present age we're at, but it's good to sort of paint this picture. So then after the Silver Age, I guess then people have really begun to master themselves, their physical bodies and their minds, and realize their spiritual nature. Is that effectively the way you'd look at it?
Right, right. And then there are other keys to understand this better. And the one I was starting to talk about a little bit is the four aspects four illusions that of what we call Maya or illusion in Hinduism that cover the face of God, so to say, the infinity of God. And first of all, if you think of the infinity of God beyond all conception, and then if you start the first vibration of creation, as soon as you have vibration, like a sine wave, for instance, you have up and down, that means you have distance, you have space, and you have time, and of course vibration. And those are the four aspects. That's anu, a physical matter, desha, space, kala, time, and om, vibration. And these four aspects then actually tie perfectly into the four ages, because anu represents physical matter, and where only the outer world is real to us. That's when we live in like an atheistic, materialistic culture. And it takes a lot of power, like a religion like Christianity or Islam, to make people believe in something deeper. But what happens is the most advanced things you can attain in terms of technology in this dark age is architecture and engineering. And once you get to the next level of the Bronze Age, I mentioned Vaisheshika, which is the science, outer exploration, and I mentioned Desha, space, is the second of those qualities of illusion. The space really means that, first of all, we uncover the atom, and we find out that inside the atom, it's really not what it seems. It's not physicalness anymore. It's mostly empty space.
I've heard it's 99.999% space.
Right, and it's really only electromagnetic forces that keep my hand from going through the table. It's not really physical interaction. And so it changes our whole perception in this new age. And in the dark age, people cannot understand electricity and magnetism. That's something reserved for the next age, the Bronze Age that we're in.
Well, let's talk about the transitions then of some of the ages in a little more detail when we get back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. Has his master's in Asian studies, PhD candidate in history of religion, and he's an expert on the yugas. Recently gave a very nice talk on them over at UCI. And Boris, you were talking about the characteristics of some of the ages. Can you kind of give us a modern day analogy? I know your nanotechnology analogy is a good one.
Yes. We were just talking about the four aspects, the four illusions that cover the infinity of God, and we're just talking about Desha space, which is characteristic of the Bronze Age that we have now entered since the year 1900, and fully entered, even though it doesn't seem like it in many ways. But one of the things about this age...
Let me just interrupt you there. I know a lot of people think that, you know, how can we be in an ascending age when all this bad stuff seems to be happening in the world. And I would just say, you know, you have to sort of tear down the old stuff before you can have new consciousness. You know, the Soviet Union has fallen apart. The Berlin Wall came down. And those aren't bad things. You know, this is very bad for the builders of the wall and the people that run in the Soviet Union. And so the financial markets going through this massive restructuring might be bad for, you know, the pure money lovers, but it's going to make way for sort of a higher consciousness, a greater emphasis on underlying values. So I'll get that out of the side and let you get back to your thought, Boris.
Yeah. Well, you're absolutely right. I think communism falling without a shot, you know, is just was just miraculous to me, that a real sign that things aren't as bad as they might be for the transition of finally getting into the next age. And one of the things that this kind of relates to is also you have the three gunas in Hinduism that also tie into the four ages, the tamas, or darkness, inertia. You see brutality, torture, all these kind of things reflect the dark age. And then the next age that we've just entered, more reflected by it's called rajas, which is passion, activity. But the problem is, since we're so close to the dark age, all this energy that you're feeling in the world right now, which is phenomenal, is completely mixed up with a lot of the tamas, with the darkness still.
Right.
And so you're literally stirring up mud, and people that still hold on to the old ideas and don't want to let go are getting pretty upset and even violent about it. You know, so that's one of the things we're facing, and that transition will kind of still continue this century, I believe. But getting to the space, this concept of focus on space, like the atom being really empty space, and the vacuum, in fact, of space containing infinite amount of energy. And the other thing about it is the conquest of space is the telegraph, telephone, where we can talk at a distance, and then the television we can see at a distance. And the idea of this yuga, by the end of this yuga at some point, we will have conquered space. We've already started doing that. We've been to the moon. We're heading for Mars and some of the outer planets with spacecraft. But the idea is that we, by the end of this yuga, we will be able to go to the stars. There will be methods figured out, and there are already people that have patents on ways of bending light and this sort of thing. A long discussion on that.
Right, we've had some scientists on the show about that very idea.
And then in the Silver Age, that's when we get to Kala, time, where we conquer time. And there are some ancient texts like the Yoga Vaisheshika, which talk about people in that age just naturally being able to be in numerous bodies in different times in history, which sounds completely bizarre to us. But the point is that these things are kind of beyond our comprehension, but this is where things are going. And what I wanted to point out with the nanotechnology example is that things are moving pretty quickly, and we're not really quite ready for it. So imagine right now, this is a colleague of mine in nanotechnology who has come up with this concept of the foglets. And this is concerns programmable matter. And what happens is, imagine these tiny little things. Imagine the pixels on a TV screen. And imagine being a little bit smaller than that, but they're actually little tiny devices with hooks on them that are controlled by a computer program. And they hook together in soft and hard, like molecular bonding. And you have them...
And you're doing this on a very small scale right now?
Well, they're starting to look into it. There's even some money funded by the government for some initial things on this.
Okay.
But what's exciting is, well, imagine these little tiny things, instead of being pixels on a TV screen, these are voxels. They're volumetric pixels, and we call them foglets. And now, they're not only all over your floor, but also in the air. You can't see them, but because they're so tiny, they just float in the air, and they keep like a very soft connection so that it seems like air. And on
and
the ground...
And they could make up the room you're in. They could make
right.
up the chair, the
and
floor, the walls.
Exactly. So when you're at night, when you wake up, you just say a code name or something, and you're... bedroom turns into a living room, and all the bed that was held together by the foglets dissolves and reforms into chairs and table, whatever you know you have for your living room. And then let's say your friend calls you from Brazil, and then you get a choice. Are you going to pretend to be in his room or in your room? Let's say you're going to be in his room in Brazil, then automatically all the foglets reform to the room of your friend. And then you sit down on your friend's couch, you walk up, shake his hand because he's made of foglets, and so are you for him. So at that point, you don't even know what's real and what's not real anymore.
Right. So is that is actually conceivable? You actually talk about this concept at conferences?
Yes, yes.
And what do you talk that this could be in 100 years or 500 years? Or
oh, no. I would say we'll see initial things of that where, like, maybe the foglets move along the wall as a television screen while you're walking through your house, and it'll get more complex in the next 50 years.
Okay,
you'll
well,
see more and more.
This is too interesting. Hold that thought for us.
Okay.
So we're back, and foglets then are sort of a concept, a material concept of how things might be instantly changeable in the higher ages.
That's right. And what's exciting is that, like, imagine a house made of foglets. You go on vacation, it dissolves, and you come back, and you just figure what kind of model of house you want, and it comes back. Or you can even, you know, forget going to Disneyland. You can just reprogram your house to be World of Warcraft and have incredible games. So this kind of thing that we're seeing, it's not virtual reality. It's really real. You can touch the couch. It's real, even though it's made of foglets. The house is real. And so the point in terms of the yugas is that if this stuff is happening, you know, we're beginning to talk about these things, and we know we have certain capabilities that will fruition in the next 20, 50 years or so, then what's it going to be like in 1,000, 2,000 years from now if this continues? You know, people can't even imagine what's going to happen. And what's critical...
Yeah, we talk about that all the time. Yeah. The future is inconceivable. Imagine 200 years ago you're talking to a farmer and you say, hey, we now have robots that can go to the moon... we have little devices that we all carry around so we can instantly talk to somebody in China and, you know, things like this. And and we can clone farm animals. And he'd probably say, why do you want to clone farm animals? You know, what is cloning?
Right.
Why do you want to talk to somebody in China? Do you speak Chinese? Do they know something we need? You know, it's there's no relevance there. And I think we have the same difficulty in trying to understand the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the other important thing about these foglets is that we can begin to understand that in the future there won't be dumps where, you know, like landfills and that sort of thing, because there won't be any waste. And that's also why we probably won't find a lot of advanced technology in past archaeological digs. You know, we might find some large monuments like the pyramids and things like that, but a lot of that advanced technology just reforms into whatever is needed. Maybe we'll find some remnants of what could be foglets when we can understand what we're looking at.
Well, that's a good point. And plus, you know, by the time one civilization gets to the point that they're able to create a bunch of trash, it's only a few hundred more years until they're hopefully smart enough to realize that they don't need to have to create a bunch of trash. And I think that's one of the big mistakes of archaeology today, is we judge a civilization by its trash, because we produce lots of trash. We assume an advanced civilization would produce lots of trash.
That's a really good point. That's excellent. Yeah, and then we also look for war and destruction, and that's how we base a lot of our history. And when you look at The Fall by Steve Taylor, that book that's come out recently, which is brilliant, which proves a lot of these ideas of the Yugas, that before 4000 BC, there really were no wars, no weapons, no city fortifications. And things were very different. And he's shown this from many, like, anthropologists and historians going back to those early times. And it's well documented.
Yeah, he breaks the rules of history. We were often taught that settlements came together to for protection from each other, and you can't have large structures until you have writing. And all these things are being thrown out the door, because we're finding places like Göbekli Tepe, Turkey, and Caral, Peru, that were very complex structures seem to exist before writing.
Yeah, there's so much to get into. The other thing I was hoping we could get into a little bit is the Axial Age.
Okay, but just to finish on this thought then,
yeah,
is that the Yugas then provide sort of a guideline in understanding not only the distant past, but the distant future.
Absolutely. And to understand our time a little bit better, if we go back to the Axial Age, which Karl Jaspers, a kind of Swiss-German historian, philosopher, coined, it was such a crucial age from around 800 BCE to 200 BCE.
Okay.
And that time, all our modern religions, and then, of course, a couple of years, 100 years later was Christianity and then Islam. But all our modern understanding of religion come from that period of time. And why is that happening? It's because the higher ages ended and the dark age began, and man needed completely different tools of understanding to handle the dark age.
Yeah, he no longer had the ability to understand subtle forces and you know, anything besides the material, I guess.
Right, yeah. And so imagine a person who had this cosmic connectedness through meditation. In the higher ages, everybody meditated. Even like in Greece, you have the Apollonian priests, and Pythagoras and Parmenides tried to keep some of that going. But the point is that, let's say you have that cosmic connectedness and you do something wrong, you feel the loss of this connectedness, so immediately try to get it back. But now you come into the dark age, and you're completely in the physical body. You're a shudra. You're a slave to your body. And now you don't know right from wrong anymore. So that's when Confucius came along to teach us how to behave. And then you have, like, in Zoroastrianism, you have in that religion, teaches ethics, the good battle between good and evil. You know, we need guidelines when we no longer have this, and we need texts, we need holy books to help us, and we have the beginning of dogma. You do this and you do that, and then you'll be saved, you know, this concept. But the ancients talked about cosmic maintenance. That was their religion. And those that cosmic maintenance, when that interconnection of spirituality is lost, then the rituals become empty and misunderstood. And then you have things like the Aztecs, the slaying people, and all this misunderstanding of what cosmic connectedness meant, because you had come into the dark age. So you needed something else. You need ethics. You need to know how to behave. And same thing with Mahavira and Jainism in India, the focus on ahimsa, on not harming anyone, because he knew that time was coming. And also the open-mindedness toward people that he focused on, of respecting other cultures and religions. And in Hinduism, you have a complete changeover from Brahmanism, of the ritual of the previous age. And now what's happening is it's coming back. We're now transitioning back.
Okay, we'll hold the thought on the coming back for the next segment.
Okay.
Listening to Cosmic Influence. Be right back. And so basically the wheel is on its way back up. And explain that then, if you would.
Right. So once we had descended into the dark age and lost that connectedness, now gradually in our age, we're back into the Bronze Age. And think about that, it's documented 18 million people in the U.S. alone are meditating or practice some form of yoga on a daily basis. 18 million people in the U.S.
Yeah, and that's only 7% of the population, but it's a big step in the right direction.
That's huge. You know, when you think of where, like, you and I have been meditating for some 40 years, and when I started in the 60s, hardly anyone knew about meditation. There were no books out there, hardly.
Probably less than 1% of the population then.
Right, right. So what's exciting is, you know, in India you have this concept of the twice born, the three higher castes of the twice born. And in Christianity you have the idea of the second birth and of baptism.
Born again.
The being born again. And that what that means is that once you go back into the higher age, as an individual, you can be in a low age and still be higher inside. But the point is, once you get that connectedness back through meditation and prayer, then you're living in that higher state, and then you know what is right from wrong, because you have that inner guidance. And that's the difference from the Dark Age to the Bronze Age and to all the higher ages.
Okay, and if enough people then get that understanding, then the type of religion can change from this dogmatic, rules-based religion to what?
Right. Then, and that's what we have in terms of the keys of the Vedas here. We move from the yama-niyama, the moral conduct, that is the common thing in the Dark Age. You know, that's when you do this and you do that and you'll be saved and you believe in this. And now people want a personal experience of God. They're not satisfied with dogma anymore. And that's reflected by the eight steps of Patanjali, the eight steps of yoga. So the first two yama and yama are the Dark Age of religious observances. But now in the Bronze Age, the next two are asana and pranayama, that is the yoga postures, and pranayama, which is control of the subtle life currents. And so that's what we're doing now. People are doing tai chi in parks, even in the U.S., you know, it's like we're doing acupuncture. We're aware of, like, energy medicine. All this thing is changing.
Yeah, even not just inwardly, but outwardly, too. You know, all the different types of energies that have been discovered. And I've got an interview coming up here with somebody on the whole idea of different earth energies. And, it seems we're gaining a greater awareness of these subtle forces.
Right, absolutely. absolutely. And the other interesting thing is when you have someone in the dark age, when you have a prophet that comes to help mankind, he tries to bring you into the next age and practice the things that are done in the next age. So, like Jesus tried to, he had to focus a lot on the do's and don'ts and be an ethical behavior. But he also, for his deeper people in the monasteries, there were meditation ways like prayer, and like the Jesus prayer in the Eastern Orthodox Church, that takes you to a deeper level of awareness, and that's moving towards the Bronze Age, and it's also the energy of the Bronze Age has to be emulated in the Dark Age when no one wants to do anything. So that's why, like for instance, Islam, all the warfare between Christianity and Islam and all these other things. That energy had to be brought out so people can work off their karma. But now in our age, we have to emulate the religion of the next age, the Silver Age, and that is learning deeper methods of meditation to interiorize the mind. And most people don't want to do that right now because they're in all this energy. They're all outgoing. And so that's why religion in our age has to be learning how to go within to be in contact with God.
Yeah, just to have balance in this crazy world.
Right, right.
Yeah. Good. Well, so then the four yugas, or the different ages that the Greeks talked about, correspond to history very well and can help us understand, again, the distant past and farther into the future if we'll take them seriously and study them.
Right, and each age gives people what they need through the prophets. And I think, for instance, Plato, at the beginning of the downgoing Dark Age, around 500 BC, he gave them what they needed in terms of like the syllogism, logic, clear ways of thinking, because you're now trapped in the mind. That's in the Kali Yuga, you're trapped in the mind. If you want to know how to get out of the trapped mind, if you listen to Eckhart Tolle, you hear a lot, you know, clarity there.
We had Peter Kingsley on the show, too, and he talked
right.
About the change from Parmenides, when he was still talking about the reflection and incubation and and even Plato, Aristotle, Archimedes, you know, they talked about where did they get their knowledge from dreams and incubation.
Right. Yeah, and that those are the things that were allowed for the fewer people that are still capable. They had to have something, and so that's why there are people like Pythagoras, who was an Apollonian priest, to teach people still how to meditate. And like in China, even though Confucius came along to teach people how to behave, also Lao Tzu came along with Taoism for those people who could still go deeper. And in China and India were the only cultures that made it through the Dark Age without being completely destroyed, like Egypt and Babylonia. And that's why they were able to have someone like the Buddha come along and actually teach meditation to make it through. They had enough there that they could have it slightly higher.
Well, let's hope that we can make it through the present transition from this gross material age to a higher age ourselves. We're almost out of time, Boris, and
yes.
I want to thank you for being on the show. And I know we've just barely scratched the surface here, so hope we can talk again.
Yes.
And you're going to be at the next CPAC, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Good. Well, we look forward to hearing your presentation there.
Good.
And we're listening to The Cosmic Influence. Be right back. Great topic. My favorite topic, as a matter of fact. Just as understanding the seasons of the solar year can give us great insight into weather patterns, crop and migration cycles, and can be key to living a good life, I hope you can pick up that understanding the yugas, or the changing ages, be just as useful in giving us insight into history and the wisdom of the ancients. And that's something we need to bring back more of today. So we barely scratched the surface with Boris Fritz. We'll hope to have him back when he finishes his book that he's working on. In the meantime, pick up a copy of my book, Lost Star of Myth and Time, or come visit with us at the next conference on Procession and Ancient Knowledge, which will be this October 10th at UCI. In the meantime, bring on the higher ages.